Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Kovacs here. Today we have the incredible zechut to finish Sanhedrin in Mishneh Yomi and begin Mishnayot Makot. We're in chapter 11 of Sanhedrin. Yesterday we talked about the false prophet in our continuation of the list of people who get executed via chenek, strangulation. Now picking up Mishnah Vav, the last Mishnah, Hamitnabe b'shem avodah zarah. Someone prophesizes in the name of anything except Hashem, any sort of deity or pagan idol or whatever. Va'omer, and he's telling people, Kach Amra Avodah Zarah. This is what the Avodah Zarah said to do. Now, afilu kiven et a halacha. Even if it's halachically correct, what he's saying, letame et a tame, he's saying something that's impure is impure, letahir et a tahor, or saying something is ritually pure when in fact halachically it is. Even when he's telling Jews to follow Jewish law, but in the name, on the authority of some sort of deity or outside forces, that is liable to the death penalty. Continuing our list of Nechanochin, Habo al Eshet Ish, a man who lives intimately with a married woman. And the Mishnah explains, Kevon shenichnasal reshut habal l'nesuin, once she enters the domain, under the protection of the husband for the purpose of getting married, afal pi shalo nivola, even though she was never alone with her husband, haba aleha hare ze bechenik, if at that point there is an adulterous relationship, an affair, then they both get chenik, strangulation. Now, the Mishnah points out these details because back in chapter 7 about Skila, we learned that if it's a Naro Merasa, a young woman who's still Bevet Aviha, still living with her father's family, her family of origin, then it's actually a Skila instead of a Chenek. To illustrate the difference, think about Parshat Chaye Sarah, where Avraham sends Eliezer to go pick out and bring home a Shidduch, a wife for Yitzchak. So assuming Rivka over there is a Nara and she's living with her parents, and Eliezer gave her this jewelry and said it was for the sake of marriage, so now she's technically a married woman. If, God forbid, such a girl had an affair at that point, it would be Skila. She's still with her family of origin, still in her father's house. But if after she agreed to go travel with Eliezer and be under his protection to go back to Yitzhak, then she's already considered in the authority under the domain of Yitzhak, and it would be a chenek. The Mishnah adds another chenek case, Zomame bat Kohen uboala, Adim Zomamin, who testified that the daughter of a Kohen committed adultery, and the man who indeed did commit adultery with her. Now remember, the Bat Kohen gets a Sreifa. We explained she's, bringing this horrible deed, this horrible reputation on her father's house, on the Kedusha of the Kahuna. But if two witnesses said that she did such a terrible thing, but they're Adim Zomamin, meaning they're lying and making up the story, they were actually somewhere else at the time that they said that they saw this crime take place. So there's Adim Zomamin, we'll see, are supposed to get the same punishment that they intended their victim of their false testimony to receive. As the Mishnah says, Shekol Zomimin Makdimin Oto L'Otamita, every Eid Zomim, every false witness, we give him the same death penalty if it's a capital case, Chutz Mizomimi Bat Kohen, except for those who testify falsely about the daughter of a Kohen committing adultery, Uvola, and a man who actually lives with a Bat Kohen, who is already married. Mazel tov on finishing Sanhedrin, and it's very nice that in the Mishnayot version they finish talking about Edim Zomamin, because we're turning over to Makot now. First Mishnah and Makot, Ketzad Edim Nasin Zomamin. How do false witnesses become legally false witnesses? And the Mishnah actually brings a special case of Edim Zomamin, Me'idin Onu Be'ish Ploni. These two guys show up in court, they say, we are testifying about a certain Kohen, Shu Ben Grusha. He's actually the son of a divorcee, O Ben Chalitza, the son of a woman who received Chalitza, remember, from Yevamot. Chalitza is the other option. If the widow does not want to marry the brother of her first husband in Yibam, then Chalitza releases her. So Chalitza ends up being kind of like Gerushin, kind of like divorce. So they're saying that this Kohen does not have the privileges of Kahuna because of his Yichus, because of who his mother was. He is a Halal, and a Halal is a Kohen, but does not have the privileges of serving in the temple and the like. So what do we do? The Mishnah says, Ein Omrim. We don't say, the court doesn't say, Yase Zei Ben Gerusha O Ben Chalutza Tachtav, that these witnesses now get the legal status of being the son of a divorcee, the son of a Chalutzei. Ela loke arbaim. Rather, they get 40 lashes. We'll learn the 40 lashes is really 39, and really they would have a medical examination come and make sure that the person who needs to get the lashes could tolerate 39. It was reduced if he could not. In any event, they get whipped by the court instead of the punishment they intended to mete out. Now, typically, as we learned in the last Mishnah of Sanhedrin here, that in Eid Zomem, once it's proven that he was somewhere else, he could not have possibly seen what he's testifying to, he gets the same punishment, be it financial, be it capital punishment, whatever it is, that he intended the victim of the false testimony to get. But this is an exception. The Gemara proves out why. The Kahati mentions it. We can't make these people and their children to also be Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza legally, so we give them Malkut. Now, the Mishnah continues to bring exceptional cases of Edim Zomamin where the penalty is a little bit off the beaten path. For example, Me'idin on a Bish Ploni Shu Chayev Liglot. If they testify about someone, he's Chayev to go into Golut, into exile, meaning he killed by accident, he has to run away into exile to one of the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge that we'll talk about in chapter 2. Ein Omim Yigle Zayei Tachtav. We don't say these witnesses go into exile instead of their intended victim. And look here by him, we give them Malkut instead. Or Me'idin Anabish Ploni Shiger Shadishto, V'lo Natan La Kedivata. Two witnesses come to court. They say, we saw that Reuven gave his wife a get, and Reuven never paid her the ketuvah. So they're trying to make Reuven pay the ketuvah, and maybe it's 200 zuz, the default amount, but the Mishnah and the Gemara explain there's a chance that Reuven will have to pay the ketuvah anyway if there's a divorce, or if Reuven passes on before his wife, he would anyway have to pay her the ketuvah. So what really is Reuven losing out due to this false testimony? What fine should we hit the Edim Zomim with? The Mishnah says, hello, Bein Hayom, Bein the Machar, maybe today, maybe later, so Felitan LaKetuvata, he might have to give her the ketuvah, either through death or divorce. So Omdin Kama Adam Rotzi Liten Ketuvata. So we have to assess financially how much a person would pay for the rights to this ketuvah, shelzu, of this particular woman. Imnit alma, she might become a widow and get paid her full ketuvah. Onit garsha, she might get divorced and pay the full ketuvah. The imeta, but if she dies first, yirashena baila, then the husband doesn't pay the ketuvah, instead he inherits the property she brought into the marriage. So it's a bit speculative. It's like buying a future interest, like buying something that might go up, it might go down, it might be worth money, it might be not. So we have to evaluate how much somebody would reasonably pay as a potential investment in this ketuvah, and that's the fine that the Edim Zomamim will pay the husband that they falsely testified divorced and did not pay the ketuvah. Finally, the Mishnah brings a related case. Me'idin anu be'ish ploni Edim Zomamim come and falsely testify. Shehu chayev l'chavero elef zuz amanat liten lo mikan v'shloshim yom. We're testifying he owes him 1,000 zuz and he has to pay him back within 30 days. The Huomer and the guy they're speaking about, the victim of their testimony, says, you know, it's true I borrowed the money, I borrowed 1,000 zuz, but it was mikon v'ad eser shonim, but the terms of the loan was 10 years. So really, the amount in question is exactly the same. So what fine do we make the Edim Zomimin pay? Om din kam adam rotze liten, how much would a person want to give? Yihu biyado elef zuz, and he would have the right to use 1,000 zuz on loan. Bein notnan mikan vat shloshim yom, bein notnan mikan vat eser shonim. So how much would he pay? What's the difference between the right to have this money for 10 years and the right to have it for only 30 days? Obviously, if you can hold on to the money for longer, there's some value to that. You can invest it in something that's more lucrative and make more profit. Yashar Kochachem, Mazel Tov, welcome to Mako, Tizkul Mitzvot.